Episode 726 here for the Super Bowl episode. It's going to be a very average Super Bowl because we have so many problems going on right now. El Rojo is here with us and he has no mic, he has no headset, so he can't hear what's going on. So we're going to do this best we can with the limited resources we have. El Rojo, thanks for joining us. I know you don't want to be here right now. So El Rojo was hoping that the Eagles would win, and that didn't happen, and he screamed violently over and over again. Look, we have no viewers. Pretty impressive. We scared them off already. I'm assuming we have sound and we're all working. We are working with a different system. But comment, let us know if things are okay here once we get viewers. But it is Super Bowl weekend, and I just want to keep knocking out the episodes. Today, we're going to be covering a couple, well, one news story, which is the pedophile of the week. So there's a second chance pedophile, and they're in high demand because apparently we're letting pedophiles coach now. But we're Megan's on the show again on Super Bowl weekend, always here every week. I'm going to smash her and smash Megan Rapinoe every Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. We're going later today because of the Super Bowl. But we got in, and congratulations to the Chiefs. I didn't really watch any of it. I just let Jack scream constantly and let me know what's going on. But from Omaha, Nebraska, believe it or not, we have another pedophile in the news. When parents send their kids to participate in recreational activities, they expect their kids be in good hands but with trusted adults. But that's not the case. It's not only pedophiles. It's a lot of other things. But let's throw in the news story, Jack.
And send their kids to participate in recreational activities. They expect that their kids will be in good hands with trusted adults. However, some Omaha parents are upset that no one disclosed to them that their daughter's soccer trainer had been convicted of a sex crime. I sat down with a father who tells me his trust with the Metro Wolves Soccer Club is broken.
Between June and July of 2022, Josh Monroe's then four-year-old daughter was enrolled in soccer camp with the Metro Wolves Soccer Club of Omaha. Monroe tells 6 News he pulled his daughter off the team because he says the coach yelled at the kids.
He yelled at them, and it wasn't like he was yelling at high school kids. I played high school sports, so I can understand that, but it was 4, 6, 7, 8-year-olds that he is yelling at about not doing something right. And so we took our daughter out of that organization.
And Monroe says he would have pulled his daughter much sooner because now, 7 months later, he and his wife just learned this week that same person, Jason Dishman, is a registered sex offender.
Found out about it through passing with another parent that was in the same camp that we were. And she said, hey, by the way, found out that the coach was a sex offender. My daughter called him coach. I viewed him as the coach. Other parents did.
In 2010, Jason Dishman pleaded no contest to attempted sexual assault of a child. He was accused of being inappropriate with a 15-year-old female soccer player on a team he was then coaching. Dishman was sentenced to 5 years probation and ordered to register as a sex offender for 25 years.
That part's frustrating. It's frustrating that we trust our kids and we signed up to help our daughter grow in soccer and we trust her to be around adults that are going to care for her, and we were lied to, point blank. Nobody came out and told us about this. And for me as a parent, that's hurtful. And it breaks a lot of trust with the community that probably doesn't need to be broken.
2 days ago, Josh's wife emailed David Clements, the Metro Wolves Soccer Club administrator, asking what the club is doing to protect the children in its care. In his response, Clements said, quote, he admitted his conviction at the time of his application to the board, which was also when his son enrolled in our program. He has had no further offenses of any type since then, has a stable home life with a 6-year-old son and another child on the way, and passed the relevant U.S. Soccer Federation mandated background checks and training. At his request, we never put him in any one-on-one training sessions, only group training sessions with other staff present. Nor will he be a head coach slash authority figure on any team with us, only a group trainer, again, at his request. We did debate his hiring internally, but deemed him not to be at risk of being a repeat offender, end quote. 6 News also reached out to Clements, who tells us, quote, all coaches and trainers, whether parents or not, are held to the safe sports standards and practices that the club adheres to. The safe sports standard is all interactions are observable and interruptible, which means another adult has to be in the immediate vicinity. No one, whether staff or volunteer, is allowed to be with any players alone, and there are no one-on-one trainings allowed, end quote. The Monroes don't understand how a registered sex offender passed a background check with the U.S. Soccer Federation.
They believe in second chances. The great news for them, so does most of America. We do not believe in second chances. When you do something inappropriate to a child, that you should be put in that same environment. So his offense was with a child that he met on a soccer field. You don't give that same opportunity again. And that was given to him, and that information wasn't disclosed to us as parents.
The Monroes say their daughter will not be returning to the Metro.
Well, interesting. Second chance. How do you feel about second chances? Comment. Let me know. Is it okay to potentially go after a child and get busted for it, five years of probation, and be like, okay, let's just wait a little bit, and you're exonerated. You're okay. You served your time. Yeah, I believe the rules with pedophiles is that once you commit the crime, and whether you are innocent or not, if you're accused of it and in court of law and you have to serve time for it and you have to be a registered sex offender, yeah, it's a lifetime ban. That's how it works. Murderers, you can kill someone apparently and then serve your time and then you'll be accepted with everybody, but not pedophiles. So yeah, you can't do it. So the board of directors approved it. It was okay. And that's how we roll. This is how, we function society that don't worry, he's a pedophile, but we had supervision. So he was never left alone with those girls. Okay. Even if you were not a pedophile, you shouldn't be left alone. Anyways, there should always be supervision. So speaking of supervision, we have too much supervision in some of these, pay to play organizations. Well, all of them. So the parents throw a fit. Coaches overcoach, including myself. On Saturday, it's just too much. It's chaotic all over the place. I'm trying to find a way. How do I put the kids in a competition where they do not experience such pressure, such stress and anxiety, because there's a referee and there's parents on both sides. My sideline was pretty chill, but the opposite side is out of control, screaming, excited about everything. They miss hit balls. They accidentally go in, and it's a celebration like they won the World Cup. And it's just so emotional, so much disgustingness that happens on Saturday competition. I'm not a fan of it. I'm a fan of street development. A lot of the best players in the world, Messi, Neymar, Eber, we know Ronaldo, but I forgot Ibrahimovic. Zlatan. They play in the street. A lot of top players would play with a club and get that experience of the professional coach. But then they would play in the streets for hours upon hours. And I know what you're saying in America and this pay-to-play system. That's just too much. You're gonna hurt them, and they can't do that kind of thing. Well, if you want to compete to the next level, we need an environment where our kids are competing without a referee, without a parent influence, without a coach's influence. Comment, let me know. Am I speaking crazy, or do you think there just need to be professional coaches? So the first video, Jack, what's the second one? We'll talk about the second one. Show the new coaching. Yeah, so this is what we experience from coaches. Paid coaches, so, by the way.
You don't have future. You can never make it. You're supposed to be a dinner man, serving dinner to the students in the secondary school, because you cannot do basic 1+1. You are here breathing heavy like a dog. Think about your life. You are a failure. You can never make it. You cannot make it. You need to be cutting grass, making this place fresh for the actual footballers that want to use this place. You are tired. You are here. What have you done? Useless. Me with my pregnancy, I'm better than you. Idiot.
And funny the video is, but that's what happens in sideline. There's a constant abuse, even from me, just coaching too much, saying too much, and trying to find a way to communicate in such a way to get the players to not be scared to play. And I interject a lot because I'm trying to offset the crazy, and it's hard. I don't know what to do. What do we do other than create an environment where the kids can get opportunity on the ball, where it's safe without referees, without sideline influence? The kids have to be able to process information. And I'm not just saying for everyone involved, rec, intermediate, high level, during the developmental years, we need opportunity on the ball, which you have to create on your own. You have to have a soccer league in your backyard where there's no influence other than the love of the game. And that's where creativity happens, that where so many positive things happen from that environment. Kids need to play. So I got thinking, I'm like, all right, so I'm coaching my son's team at State 48, U11. I'm trying to figure out, how do I get them to be able to compete in such a way that it's not scary on Saturday? How do I get the repetition where they can be confident, where they can overcome the sideline influence and all the stresses that are provided by U.S. soccer competition? So this is what I came up with. Let me know if you think this will work. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure out a way to have the kids have an opportunity to play Monday through Thursday, 4 days a week, where it's just play. We're going to have puck goals, 4v4, 6v6, whatever the numbers are, 2v2, 1v1, just constant over and over. But we have to do it over and over every day of the week and play nonstop to get the repetition to offset the crazy. Because if most of your gameplay is weakened with the pressure of the sideline, the referee, and the constant abuse of what the game presents, you have to offset it probably times four. So I'm thinking it's the only way you can do it is create that street soccer at practice where it just let them play. Hey, give them some meaning. Say, hey, go ahead and be creative. Don't just kick it. There has to be thought. Go ahead and try and fail versus just, you know, some of the kids are just kicking and hoping and just being reckless in that capacity. You can deal with that. But the kids need to play. And I don't know how to fix it other than through simple math of just hour upon hour of trying to create that environment where the kids are playing, and then save the coaching on the weekend when the abuse happens, which is in the game. Was there a comment I need to address?
No, it was just a reply.
Okay. And this is, I was a question on YouTube, you know, like, I wish you would talk about this or that. And, you know, and so I sent them videos and everything about things I have covered, because we're on episode 726. I've covered a lot. And I said, I have a live show every Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, unless there's a Super Bowl. I'll get a little later. But this podcast is your opportunity to ask questions, and then I'll address it. But before we get to doing that, so Jet had a game. We played right by the Phoenix Open in Scottsdale, or the Waste Management Open. And we played the game. Wasn't the greatest thing to witness. Kids didn't play to their best of their abilities. Some did, some haven't. And Jet, luckily, fell in love with the game for a moment. Not there, but when we went to Phoenix College, where we're just 30 balls, just shoot and play crossbar game. So we play this crossbar game. So it was me, Jack, Jet, and three of my Japanese kids. And we had a competition where we tried to hit the crossbar twice. So hit the crossbar, ball came back, hit the crossbar, came back, and then you must finish and you win the game. So we spent a lot of time on that. And Gento pulled it off. So here's some footage of it with Jet trying to do it, and eventually seeing Gento complete the task. Check this out. That was pretty legit. So the Gento accomplished the task after 500 to 700 balls were shot. But that was a playful environment that we came up together, not with a coaching, just a thought like, hey, let's play crossbar challenge. No, let's hit the crossbar twice and then finish, and then we'll have a winner. And that's kind of a fun and right environment where we're getting the reps needed for to enjoy the game. And Jet was so excited. It's hard to get Jet to even do soccer, but something clicked that during that time frame. Spending, how long were you out there, Jack? A couple hours? Two, 3 hours. And that's after you played a game. And that was cool. It was a cool experience. And getting Jet to wanting to play soccer and all that, you know, he's pretty much, oh, I just want to practice Tuesday, Thursday and have my game or whatever. But he won't do extra. And now he's doing extra by choice. And that was pretty cool. So hopefully over time, he can keep getting repetition where it's not, it's just getting to touch the ball, having opportunities to enjoy the game a little bit different. And that's how I think we can change the game. Speaking of changing the game, there is so much anger on the sidelines. And this is why I say we need to find a way to separate. I know we want to do tournaments and have official games with the referee and all that stuff, but it could be a problem. So I'm going to show you some videos of the stress I feel from sport in America, and I'm sure it's everywhere, but what's the first one? Ref hits something? What's that?
Take out ref.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah, the referee gets smashed. This is a basketball game. Same thing in soccer, though. And that's what happened. I get it's basketball, but we have soccer videos coming up in a second. But if there's so much anger and hate at games, why can't it just be chill and relax and allow kids to compete and just be okay with losing? It's okay to lose. It's okay that your kid gets fouled hard and you get a penalty kick or vice versa or whatever. Experience matters. But if the experience is you, the parent, causing a fit on the sideline and creating all this motion, it's a big problem. Now, the next video, what's the next one?
Ref hits. It's another basketball one.
Another one. Oh, yeah, let's finish the basketball stuff. Yeah, go the. Oh, yeah, this is referee where he had enough, so he actually swung first. Punk parents come with a cell phone, just videotape. Get that on my face.
Game in the state of Indiana, a brawl broke out on the court.
Here we go. Here comes their child with a punch. This is girls, by the way. That girl punched him. Oh, she got him again. Three. Get him again. Four. Oh, wow. Suplex. Five, six, seven. Seven times that kid punched.
Did the ref body slam the green shirt?
No. The referee got body slammed. Now, the referee should have been smarter. You don't slap a phone out of a man's hand with an angry child like that. So the fact that a child would punch a referee seven times to defend, I guess, father. But father should have never engaged that. He was looking for that. I obviously can't condone any of that behavior, but that's what we see. The kids are watching what the parents are doing, and then the kids behave that way. And it's why would you want to play sport when it's like that? And I know these are basketball videos, but I just throwing things together during the Super Bowl. But here's a high school brawl of high school soccer since high school season's coming up. And there we go. So, and it ended up in a brawl, but I was editing and cutting because there's a lot of violence going on. All right, so here's another one of just anger all about. What's this? This is a girls' high school. Oh, no, I don't want to do the concussion. There's a fight. Oh, yeah, do the fight one.
Dude, ref, come on, pull it.
Oh, you. Oh, jeez.
Whoa.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. Well, he was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Jack doesn't have a headset either. I left a lot of stuff elsewhere. But that luckily, they had three refs. And most places, you can't get three refs. So, good job by the AR to separate that and stop the fight. But you heard the parents talking. Everything's aggravated. They should be more upset that their kids are losing the ball with little to no pressure. They're not even trying to solve problems. It's just kick, kick, run through them. But it's ugly, disgusting. And that's what results in this just high stress situation where ultimately a girl fight. Let's check out the second girl fight. Oh my word. So it starts on the sideline. It's the parents, you know, like, come on already, stay off her or else. And then of course then daughter's hearing that and she's like, I'm gonna deal with it, and punch, and that's the problem. And she got punched in the head. Is that why there's a high concussions in girl sports or girl soccer? You know, girls soccer is high in the concussions. Number two. And there was just another report. They're trying to shut down soccer because of head injuries, because girls are reckless and they just constantly go full speed and get concussions. Put that concussion video in.
Trauma in high school sports. Boys football had the highest rate of concussion, 10 per every 10,000 practices or games. Girls soccer was second at a rate of 8 per 10,000.
How is that possible that girls soccer is only 2 points behind football? That makes no sense. Well, it does to me. Girls soccer is very emotional, very reckless, and it's led by a lot of coaches that say what? Say it. Comment. They get stuck in. Go through her, get a body on her. They abuse girls. Comment. Girls watching this show, women that went through it, has your coach said, go through her? You got to put a body on her? You got to touch her? You know, kind of like go through that to gain an advantage. Why? Because the thought is, they're not technical, so we're going to press them and really expose their weaknesses of not being able to deal with pressure situations like that, and then we get concussions. Now, in street soccer, with no coach, no parent influence, do you think those same girls would behave in the same way? Would they go through each other? Maybe, but I doubt it. I think it'd be more fun. More like, hey, let's try things. Let's enjoy the game. Maybe we play the game a little bit differently. But from my knowledge and my experience, girls don't like soccer. They won't do extra. They won't watch on TV. Why? Because they have no idea of what the game can be like. Why? Because in America, it's about bigger, faster, stronger. Put on that modified concussion helmet thing, which doesn't help because shaking the brain, it'll protect you from lacerations, but not blows the head. It just looks cool. They do that, and they do some flip throw-ins and then hope that they won't get a concussion. What's up, Jack?
What do you mean?
I don't know. You're kind of waving your locks around.
I'm just like, I don't know.
Oh, Jack. So Jack was like, hey, how long is this podcast going to take and stuff? So he's putting sideline pressure on me right now. So I'm like, I got to fast track this podcast so Jack can get out of here and move on. What the freak? So if you're interested in being IT for my podcast show, because apparently Jack's quitting. He's just really upset his football team lost, and he's not functional anymore. Even though, I don't know how much money we give you and let you borrow the car and do all these things, fly you to Colorado, go to the Air Force and do things and Argentina and all that. And you're gonna be like, oh, when's this podcast over? How dare you?
When did I say that?
What are you talking about? Now I'm really mad because I'm thinking the amount of money we spend on you. And then then Jed will be asking for it. Ryan and Cody will be like, why aren't you giving us this? And they're going to want some money too. It compounds itself because we're always wondering, you know, equality. You know, you never use the how dare yous or anything. There's so many good portions that, you know, you hit those like, see, like you hit the how dare you. Don't you just hit H or something?
How dare you?
There you go. That came in. Yeah. How dare you? So, yeah, we have real problems, not only in my studio, but in the youth soccer world, there are big, big problems. And by the way, there's something very interesting about the comparison between BMX, or the bikers and skateboarders, the Tony Hawk years, the 80s. And these skateboarders would come in and they would, and I remember I built a launch ramp because we would get VHSs and watch Tony Hawk and these skateboarders do their thing. There was no coaches back then. I was taking a skateboard and then going off a launch pad, and we would go and we would do all these like saran wraps and all these different kind of moves on a skateboard, not taught by coach, but taught by the neighborhood kids. And we just make stuff up or find it on a VHS from Tony Hawk. And, you know, we were doing half pipes, quarter pipes. We were doing all these things, swimming pools that were empty. We were skateboarding like crazy, and we're doing crazy stuff that no one thought was even possible. It had nothing to do with coaching. You ever watch the X Games and what they can do? And apparently there's now coaching in BMXing and skateboarding. Of course there is, because parents will pay for anything for their sons and daughters. It'd be great if you really want them to be great, spend all your money in your backyard. Create a turf soccer field. Every one of you guys could do this. If you're doing paying for soccer in America, you could build your own facility. Save the money. Build your own facility in your backyard. Invite, have 3-on-3, 4v4, 5v5 leagues, no referee, no parents. Just let them play, and they'll be amazing. Just mandate they have to play 10 hours a week, and they'll be better than any pay-to-play player in wherever you reside. In this country, anyways. You'd be shocked. The game is the best teacher. We always say that. We hear that in our licensing and all that. But it's truly, that's the case. And I think, Jack, that'll be your downfall if you don't continue to find those situations, because you'll elevate your game because you learn from players. Even when I played at Phoenix College, went to Loyola Marymount University, and went on and played pro 7 years, I learned my technique, my everything from coaches or from players. Like I have a highlight video of me, my first goal in the, it was called America West Arena. It was like 7,000 people were in shootout, and it's where the Suns play. I don't know what they call it. United Airways, maybe. What do they call it now? I don't even know. Anyways, I was a rookie, and I stepped up because no one was like, raise their hand, who wants to take a penalty, a shootout. And I decided to do it. Why? Because Terry Woodbury, an older player, showed me how he did his. So I mimicked what he did. Now I had so much confidence because he showed me and explained to me, this is how you do it. Players influence the game. Yes, coaches matter when it comes to the ending part of, you know, the high school years where you're trying to learn the tactics. But prior to, even during high school, you have to find opportunities to play and steal information from the streets, from those who play the game, love the game. And maybe YouTube and all that as well. You don't need pay to play. You really don't. And if you do it, you have to get hours playing on the streets. Have to find it. Don't rest and recover. Find it on the weekend or whatever. Find opportunities to play. That's how you can develop your game. Is there any more videos? Is there any questions I have to deal with? All right. Well, this is Quick to the Point, episode 726. We'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, where we'll cover another topic. But anytime, you can email me, CoachCameronPodcast@gmail.com. If you have specific things you would like to talk about, or follow me on YouTube, please. This is where I reside anyways. So if you're finding this podcast on Spotify or some other format, go to YouTube. That's the number one thing I'm promoting. Go YouTube, and it's at Coach Cameron. You'll find me. And like, subscribe, and share this podcast if any of this content is worth a darn. Other than that, we'll see you next Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Peace.